It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, the right advice at the right time. Again, if you'd like to give us a call, you can call Kinsey right now, these numbers, or
that,
this number.
That you can, 252-247-7282.
Okay, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins joining us now. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben. Good morning.
What are we talking about today?
Well, Ben, the last couple of weeks, we've talked about some, if you will, storm related legal issues, the way that potentially some of our good listeners are having to deal with, you know, contracts, putting their repair bills in writing, insurance adjusters, what does insurance cover, what does it not cover. You mentioned that more and more folks are calling in to you, Ben, here at the radio station about being scammed a bit, being taken advantage of. Wes and I want to continue to encourage people to be very careful, and to also, as we've said now for the last two or three programs, feel free to call us, either Wes or myself, if there are any specific questions that we can help anyone with as a result of this storm called Florence.
Yeah, I mean, we've had the calls.
Which is not soon forgotten.
Right.
Especially
another one coming.
Our county and eastern North Carolina is still suffering greatly. It's going to be a long time before everything is pieced back together again. So now, Ben, with that said and with that offer out there to our good listeners, we're going to change the subject here this morning. Wes, do you have anything to add on the storm?
You know, obviously, as an attorney, there's a lot of things that you think about ahead of time, and you know that things are going to probably be present in this community as it relates to a storm like this. But over the past two or three weeks, you know, I've had the benefit, and so has Cecil, of, you know, lots of questions from folks, lots of people calling, meeting with people, so on and so forth. I just want to mention a couple things that come to mind. One of the issues that I've heard a little bit about is this issue of the duty to mitigate damages. I was speaking with someone yesterday who indicated that the adjuster relative to the insurance claim indicated they're only going to pay, you know, just for the issues in the home when they saw it 2 weeks ago. That's it. And if you can't, telling the homeowner, if you cannot remove the wet insulation from underneath the house that's going to probably cause a mold issue, that's on you. Well, that's not necessarily true. The issue with regard to mitigating your damage is you have to act reasonably in order to do that.
Right.
And one of the issues that we're having in this community, obviously, with so much of a need, is that, you know, we just don't have an endless supply of contractors, mold remediation experts, so on and so forth. So as long as this person I was referring to has made a reasonable effort to attempt to have, you know, this wet insulation or whatever the issue may be removed, then they've made a reasonable effort to mitigate, even if they haven't been able to find anyone yet.
Right.
So, you know, just because the insurance company, the carrier, the adjuster says this is the way it is, that is not the end of the discussion. You have a right, of course, to get your own independent evaluation. You do have a duty to mitigate, but you have to act reasonably. And again, if you're in a situation where you can't get whatever it is removed from the home to mitigate the damages, but you've made a valiant effort, you have documentation to show that, emails, documented phone calls you've made, so on and so forth, then that's going to serve as evidence that you have acted reasonably. Another issue that came up last week on the program was we had some discussions about loss of use. We talked about loss of use. We talked about how you measure that.
Right.
We talked about, you know, it would normally be something like the rental value of the property. What would the reasonable rental value of this property be because you're displaced from it completely? But keep in mind, in some policies, you don't have the straight loss of use. You have additional living expense. So that would be a different way to calculate that. Loss of use is I've lost use of the entire property.
Right.
Additional living expenses normally, you know, just what it indicates, additional expenses that you had to incur as a result of maybe being displaced,
mm-hmm.
rent that's being paid or, you know, whatever it may be. So as we've talked about for years on the program, you know, you always really go back to the contract as well. You've got to go back to the document. The declaration page is a good place to start. But then looking
at details are beyond that.
Yeah, that's right. But then you get into the actual language of the insurance contract to determine, you know, what is covered and, you know, and what is not covered.
Mm-hmm.
We had a particular case where a young man was, in a really tight spot. He came in and we spoke with him about the fact that there was a little bit of a dispute here among what flood insurance was going to cover.
Sure.
And what the homeowner's policy was going to cover.
Or what wind and hail.
That's right. Under the wind
it's
and
like
hail.
There's like three levels here. You
that's
know?
Right. Under the wind and hail. Unfortunately, his wife had recently lost, you know, her job. And, you know, he was just in a tight spot. So he came in. And it took nothing but a letter to all the insurance companies. And mm-hmm. miraculously, they call us and he gets his money immediately.
Okay.
You know, so it's just a matter of, you know, kind of rattling the cage a little bit and waking people up saying, you know, this is a situation that's really got to be taken care of immediately.
Yeah, just because a person with a clipboard shows up at your door doesn't mean they're the final authority.
That's right. And, you know, so he went to the front of the line because, mm-hmm. you know, we use the right words, so on and so forth, and that was very good for him. So
mm-hmm.
he's done with us. We don't have
right.
to do anything else for him, hopefully,
right.
and we think that claim will be handled mm-hmm. correctly. So we've had just a lot of things like that. We've tried to give back to the community as much as possible by, mm-hmm. you know, helping people with advice, on things that we can help with, you know, relatively quickly.
I know some of the questions that have come in here in the last couple of weeks have been very important and good ones.
So. We've had
that's
a lot
right.
of questions.
Yeah.
Now, Ben, and Wes, as we've been speaking over here, I've thought of a topic that is related to this that I think we can spend the rest of the day on, rather than just jump shift to a totally unrelated subject. But, you know, the word contract
mm-hmm.
keeps coming up here, doesn't
mm-hmm.
it? Over and over and over again. And one of the subjects that Wes and I can address today is, you know, what is a contract mm-hmm. in the state of North Carolina? And does it have to be in writing? And when does it have to be in writing, if at all?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking here about, you know, these tree removal services are coming on our property. In comes our gutter repair person. In comes our roofer. In comes, you know, our dock builder,
mm-hmm.
bulkhead back person. And, of course, you know, a lot of this stuff is on a handshake.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? In the state of North Carolina, that's a contract.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Contracts do not generally, there's of course going to be exceptions to the rule here,
mm-hmm.
but generally a contract does not have to be in writing. A verbal agreement is a contract and it is enforceable. Now, Wes nor myself are going to recommend a verbal contract,
right,
okay?
Right.
Let's get some what we lawyers call indicia of writing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have some memorandum. Even if it's something that you put on a scrap sheet of paper, it's better than nothing as to what this person is agreeing to do for the following price. Be as specific as you can be and reduce the nuances of this agreement, this verbal agreement, to
mm-hmm.
writing.
Right.
That will certainly help if there is a dispute. Because let's face it, without something in writing, it's a he said, she said
mm-hmm.
situation.
Okay.
I hear us needing to go to a break.
No, we have a question. Here
yes. Comes. Does that have to be in any kind of formal language, or can it just be plain simple
language.
English?
Plain language is just fine.
Okay.
You know, obviously when we get into more technical contracts and lawyers are involved in them, then they look a little different because there's some bells and whistles that we want in the contract. I can just go on and on and on about the importance of certain verbiage.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're talking about, you know, the repair to the home, we're talking about the roof repair, we're talking about the tree removal, you know, those kind of things, it's not reasonable to, you know, expect that everyone's going to lawyer up and have a perfect lawyer written contract.
So,
but as long as plain language, we can understand what it is. We identify how many trees there are to be removed, what's supposed to happen with the trees. exactly what the payment is going to be, mm-hmm. The time frame for when, generally for which it's going to be done.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to invalidate the contract because certain language is not used.
Okay.
But it just, you just need to be able to make it clear enough.
Right.
Just plain English.
Okay.
About
reasonable,
what we're doing.
Reasonable person.
The reasonable
standard.
Person. Yes. You know, we keep talking about be reasonable with regard to everything.
Helpful to have a witness.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
As simple as Ben's Tree Service is going to remove 3 trees. One is on my home for the total sum of, you know, $1,500 in a matter of a week.
And whether or not this includes or not includes the grinding of the stump. What
right.
does what does remove a tree mean?
And that's exactly right. Because
removal.
If you just say remove, okay, they're going to remove and put them where? On the side of the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're going to remove them from my property. They're going to remove and haul off.
Okay.
Yeah, you know,
little bit more, detail.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. But it can still be everyday language. We'll have more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvey Allen Collins, Attorneys at Law. Hey, welcome back here to Let's Talk Legal with Harvey Allen Collins, Attorneys at Law. We're talking about contracts.
So, Ben, we are, and we begin our conversation about a contract, which is an agreement between one or more people, which does not usually have to be in writing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the law, that is the general rule, and now let's talk about the exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest exception in North Carolina, Wes, let me let you chime in here, but the biggest exception is, of course, real property. Don't you agree?
Right. If we're talking about a contract for the conveyance of real property,
mm-hmm.
for the purchase of real property, then any verbal contract is just not going to be enforceable at law. That has to be in writing, signed by the party to be charged. So, you know, that is, you know, when we're talking about a real estate closing, what do we do before we get to the closing? Well, the realtors, if they're involved, obviously there's the back and forth with the offer to purchase and contract.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's your standard realtor form. And we have to have that contract in writing before we know what we're going to do with regard to the purchase.
Mm-hmm.
So a handshake deal with regard to sale of property, that kind of thing, is not going to get you very far.
Right.
Go ahead.
I had a lady just yesterday. I think she's coming in tomorrow. And she is, she has purchased a substitute condominium, smaller home for herself. And that, of course, was listed through a realtor.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, that's pretty going to probably be, when I get to see the contract tomorrow, pretty tight and pretty mm-hmm. good, if you will. There'll be a contract.
Right.
There'll be a written contract.
Office to purchase.
An offer to purchase and contract, probably under the new Real Estate Commission, mm-hmm. you know, guidelines and forms. On the other hand, she says, you know, Cecil, I've sold my house. And I said, well, tell me about that. She says, well, he's going to buy the house whenever I move out. Well, do you have that in writing?
Mm-hmm.
No, sir, I don't have that in writing. Will you help me with that? Because it's my friend and neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, have you agreed upon a price? Yes, we have agreed upon a price. Have you agreed upon a time? Well, whenever I move into my other residence.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, you know, we lawyers are trained to recognize issues. And this, of course, you know, is an accident waiting to happen for mm-hmm. her to move into her other home and pay cash for it, which her new condominium, which she's planning to do. And then for whatever reason, there not be a real sale on her home to replenish, you mm-hmm. know, her liquidity, and then her home take another year, year and a half, 2 years to sell.
Right.
So she's coming in tomorrow, and what we will do, even though this is her friend, it is her neighbor, they've agreed upon a price, the timeline is her timeline,
mm-hmm.
these things need to be and must be in the state of North Carolina to be enforceable. They must be reduced to writing. renting. Mm-hmm. So we will prepare a written contract for her and for her friend buyer, and we will get that done. That way she's covered on this issue if anything were to go south. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of thing where I think our listeners can relate to this. A lot of times people will just, you know, verbally say, yeah, I'll let you have that lot. You can have that lot for $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you get your money, let me know. You know, that's not enforceable in the state of North Carolina.
Right.
That's a verbal
right.
agreement touching and concerning the sale of real estate, and it must be in writing.
Hmm.
Now, another exception is the...
Well, if you're talking about the sale of goods, mm-hmm. $500 or more, like the purchase of a vehicle, something
right,
like that,
right.
you know, you have to have that in writing. But, you know, the really...
Yeah. Well, and an example of that is a lot of people right. are looking to replace cars right now.
Right,
so they're
right.
going out and they're often at a used car lot somewhere.
Right.
And someone says, yeah, you know, if you don't like that, just bring it back and we'll just make it good.
Right. Well,
that's if it's not in writing...
Devil's in the detail with regard to all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no doubt about that. But yeah, sale of goods for $500 or more. And the way that generally works is that, you know, if you have a handshake deal with regard to, you know, the purchase of someone's vehicle and it's $500 or more,
mm-hmm.
well, you can't sue them on that if they don't perform.
Right.
You're not in a position to do that. Now, if you've paid the money and you got nothing, then mm-hmm. you probably have a claim for recovery of that under, you know, unjust enrichment or some type of quasi-contract type theory. But you can't sue in for specific performance. You have to give me that car for the $500, you know,
right.
because it's not in writing. So there's a lot of variations to the statute of frauds, and that's what we're talking about, the statute of frauds. That's
mm-hmm.
things having to be in writing. As far as real estate and the goods for $500 or more, and there are other areas of the law in which things have to be in writing, but those are the things that you usually see on a day-in, day-out basis. And when we're talking about, you know, issues of the storm,
mm-hmm.
we're talking about get things in writing. Again, you start with the fact that you know, you don't have to have a written contract in order to have an agreement for someone to go do things to your home. But why do you do that? You don't
mm-hmm.
do it because of statute of fraud. You do it because you need to have something very clear as it relates to what the agreement is.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, Kinsey stated, you know,
Remove trees, one
tree from my house, $1,500. Mm-hmm. Is that good enough? Well, what did Mr. Lawyer here and Mr. Harvell Lawyer here say? Well, what's going to happen with the trees?
Yeah.
If you say remove from the house, does that mean you're just going to put them in the yard? Does that mean that you're going to chip them up? Does that mean that you're going to spread the mulch? Does that mean
stump grind?
You know, you can't get to a point where you say, well, I paid you the money and I thought that's what you're going to do. That's reasonable. No. Go ahead and have that detail, you know, mm-hmm. in the document.
Okay. We'll take a break, and we'll come back with more here on Let's Talk Legal. Your questions are welcome at 247-7282, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak, and Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday morning with Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law. You can go online at harvellandcollins.com and always find out more about what they offer and listen to past shows as well, too. We're talking about contracts today.
Right. So we're talking about contracts in the context of, you know, the home repairs,
mm-hmm.
Removing trees,
getting
things relative to the storm, getting a car, whatever it may be. I think the human dynamic here sometimes is that the person who is providing the service, the company that's providing the service, as we were talking about off the air here during the commercial, who has his name on the side of the truck and is official
mm-hmm.
and has all his equipment, so on and so forth.
All that stuff.
That's right. If he or she is the one who is actually providing the contract
mm-hmm.
and there it is. There, you've set on a number, generally talked about what they're doing. But then once you read that document, it leaves a little something out. Don't make the mistake of feeling as though you have to agree with that document that maybe was just written up quickly on the back of the truck,
mm-hmm.
or even written up at the office. If there's something that you feel as though got left out of that before the work gets started,
mm-hmm.
you know, let's go ahead and just write it in, discuss it with them,
mm-hmm.
initial it.
Right.
There's not a problem with doing that.
Both of you initial.
That's right.
Yeah.
Folks sometimes are so eager maybe to get started on whatever the job is.
Sure.
Or maybe they just, you know, trust the handshake, which is, you know, obviously we want to be able to do that,
mm-hmm.
you know. Deep down inside, we want to be able to trust the guy who's doing the work. But when the contract comes into play is after the work is done and there's a problem. Well, then we come back to that language. Then we come back to exactly what was agreed to. And, you know, obviously sometimes business relationships, you know, have problems after
mm-hmm.
whatever the meeting of the minds was, or we thought the meeting of the minds was not met. So then what we have to look at is we have to look at that specific language in the document to determine how much was being paid and exactly what was being done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what breaks any kind of tie about the he said, she said.
Right.
So
real quick here, Ben, a very common life circumstance is, you know, the renter,
mm-hmm.
the landlord-tenant situation.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many folks are in a landlord-tenant situation under just a verbal contract,
mm-hmm.
and that is enforceable.
Mm-hmm.
The law then, because it is so common, the statutes of North Carolina then impose certain guidelines, deadlines, for a verbal contract,
mm-hmm.
okay, in terms of the notice requirement to terminate a month-to-month tenancy. The things of that nature are codified in our statute because it is so common
mm-hmm.
for folks just to enter into, I'm going to stay in your apartment and I'm going to pay $750 a month.
Right.
Okay,
right.
And that's the end of it, okay? On the other hand, it is best that there be a contract
mm-hmm.
for landlord-tenant tenancies. There needs to be a lot of conditions and contingencies that can arise in a tenancy. And as a result of that, we are certainly going to advise that there be a lease agreement and that it be in writing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think today has been very useful for our listeners to hear. And they might be a little shocked and surprised to hear how many contracts don't have to be in writing. Now, mm-hmm. we're not advising that. I made that real clear,
right,
okay?
Right.
That's why you have to end up at our office, unfortunately, mm-hmm. because you just have, you know, a handshake agreement, even on a tenancy situation or on any situation. Contracts are best when reduced to writing. But due to the fact that we are, you know, common law that arose out of, mm-hmm. you know, the Great Britain and England and mm-hmm. ancient law of this nature, centuries old, contracts were based on a handshake. And very few of them require a written contract.
Mm-hmm. All right. Again, if you want to find out more, you want to take advantage of making that appointment with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins and the folks at Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law, give them a call, 252-726-9050. You'll find them at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City and online at harvellandcollins.com.